world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 6th of April, year of our Lord, 2026. Well, over the weekend, we saw Trump was not having a good holiday. His rant tells us something very important about him. Not only is he an unhinged vulgarian, but he's also desperate and dangerously losing. This guy has backed himself into the corner, and he's ready to lash out. And that's something that everybody worldwide should be concerned about. But we're going to take a look at what you and I can do about this. Even as he's finally given up on Pam Bondi, he apparently has not given up on War Pete and the Blessed Are the Warmongers routine. Yeah, he likes to just take the oil and kill people. That's what he prefers to do. So we're going to take a look at that. The Supreme Court arguments, what comes next after Bondi is gone, and what is her legacy? What is the argument about birthright citizenship? Could it be that when Trump is finally right on an argument, that he can't execute even that, and that he poisons the water for anybody who would try to do so in the future? We'll be right back. Well, you know, some people have seen Bondi's firing as being related to Jeffrey Epstein cover-up. And, you know, maybe Todd Blanche can do even better. This is what he said when he was asked about the Epstein documents.
Thank you. You said this is the end of the Epstein, of your review of the Epstein files. So just to clarify, is the public going to learn the identities of the men who abused the girls with the information that you're releasing? And if not, why not? And then I have a quick follow-up.
I mean, you just baked in an assumption into your question that I have never said.
And that there are perpetrators when there's victims.
I'm going to learn about men that abuse these girls. Like, what does that mean?
What does that mean? I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, they're the men who abuse the young women through Epstein's...
We said in July... and it remains as true today as it was in July. If we had information in the Department of Justice about men who abused women, we would
you can trust them.
Prosecute them, right?
Of course.
That's the work that we're doing. That's why
they're so honest.
I said this earlier. There's this built-in assumption that somehow there's this hidden tranche of information of men that we know about that we're covering up or that we're choosing not to prosecute. That is not the case. I don't know whether there are men out there that abuse these women.
Don't know about that. I mean, come on, let's get real here. You know, even John Kennedy of the Republican Party, senator from Louisiana, was laughing about that. He goes, you seriously want to tell us that we have all these victims, but there's no perpetrators? How does that happen? Yeah, if there are people out there, you know, and so what they do is they redact the names, and he was a part of this. Remember, he's been the deputy attorney general. He was a part of this. Redact the names of the perpetrators, expose the names of the victims. I don't know what you mean about that. I didn't have time, but I was going to put that clip of Martin Short where he's the sleazy tobacco company executive examined on 60 Minutes. You know, it's funny that you'd say that as he sweats. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's funny that you say you've baked in an assumption there that they're criminals when there's victims. I don't think there's any criminals. I can't see any. And of course, they're seeing the same thing with the pharmaceutical companies as well. It is absolutely disgusting. It's beyond disgusting. They rape children. They murder people. They start wars. And yet, I don't know what you're talking about here. And supposedly, he's a really tough guy, according to Jonathan Turley. He said, he'll gut you like a trout. Well, I have no doubt about that. And I have no doubt that after the elections, D.C. will be swimming with Democrat trout who are out to gut Trump and impeach him. And so I imagine it's going to be open warfare there. This is what it's really about. They want a domestic civil war. And the way we don't do that, what we do as individuals is refuse to be co-opted into their tribes. We have a standard of right and wrong that is outside of Trump and his regime, outside of this criminal that you just saw there. This is the guy who spent hours with Ghislaine Maxwell, and then all of a sudden she ends up at Club Fed. What kind of a deal did he do with her? Did he gut her like a trout? Or did he gut the Constitution, justice, and the victims like trouts? That's the real issue. As a matter of fact, Judge Napolitano had this to say about how this folds into everything.
One of the reasons that I believe he will commence a war, whether he announces it tonight or not, is because he's very much under the thumb of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his Zionist donors here in the United States. And if Trump were to abandon them, they would make life miserable for him, either by revelations of a personal inappropriate behavior, which they can document, or by their use of cash to fund people who would be elected to the Congress who will make his life miserable. If the midterm elections were held tomorrow, the Democrats would control both houses of the Congress, and that is enough to pretty much to stop him in his tracks. He won't get any legislation passed, and they'll commence impeachment investigations immediately.
Yeah, and so when we look at Pam Bondi, the issue comes back to the same issue for everybody in the Trump administration, from the guy himself on down. Is it incompetence or malice? Criminal malice. So the Justice Department, for example, has dropped 23,000 criminal cases to make room for Trump's immigration crackdown. You know, we're told over and over again, well, they're getting rid of the worst of the worst. We got to get rid of these people. And whatever it takes, you know, we're going to have a Nazi-like Gestapo out there, completely ignoring the rule of law, completely ignoring the Bill of Rights, due process, search warrants, all the rest of this stuff. Just if you think somebody looks illegal, they are illegal. Just take action on that. You can kill American citizens protesting your violation of the Bill of Rights, and we'll grant you absolute immunity. You have a license to kill, quite literally. This is Stephen Miller. This is J.D. Vance saying this over and over again. And it's warranted because we got to get the worst of the worst. Well, the reality is, if you look at these statistics, and two different organizations have done so, in the first 6 months of Trump's second term, Bondi's DOJ has closed over 23,000 criminal cases while shifting resources to immigration. The majority of these cases, the analysis found, were closed without prosecution, calling into question the Trump administration's commitment to the rule of law. Whoever thought the Trump administration had a commitment to the rule of law? That's what I want to know. I've never heard that charge leveled against him. He is the person who is most contemptuous of the rule of law, whether it is federal, constitutional, or international. He hates it, or God's moral law. He cares nothing about any law anywhere, and he said that over and over again. He said it himself. Well, fortunately, you know, he says there's, I'm not restrained by any law, just by my own quote-unquote morality, of which he has none. Within weeks of Pam Bondi being AG, the Department of Justice declined to prosecute nearly 11,000 cases, ProPublica found, and the number of declined prosecutions is higher than any other month, as far back as 2004, nearly double the previous high of about 6,500 declined cases during Trump's first term in September of 2019. When compared to the average of the last three administrations, ProPublica found that the second Trump administration has refused to prosecute more cases across a wide variety of crimes. Interestingly, these categories that they're refusing to prosecute are those that Trump himself has said were going to be his high priorities. You notice how, you know, you can't tell what Trump's going to say, but you can certainly tell that he's lying because his lips are moving, and he's going to tell you exactly the opposite of what he's going to do. Welcome back. Sorry about that drop. I think we have narrowed this down to the router that we're using, and we had already scheduled somebody to come do a hard wiring here. I can't crawl through the crawl spaces, so we're going to get somebody to do that for us. We're going to try to get that done right away, but that appears to be what is kicking us off. And it's not a very old router. I think we got it about a year or so ago. We thought we would upgrade the router, and unfortunately, it appears to be a downgrade. I was talking about the fact that the Bondi administration immediately began by dropping massive number of criminal cases without prosecution, dropping 23,000, according to ProPublica and another organization, and then adding 32,000 new immigration cases. You dropped 23,000 criminal cases, you had 32,000 immigration cases, and guess what? These people are not the worst of the worst. Virtually none of them have committed crimes, as a matter of fact. It's not just the Cato Institute, but it's also Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse. And they both found about the same thing. They said, one of them said 73%, the other one said 74% of the people that are being the immigration cases are people who have never had a criminal case brought against them. Never had a criminal case even brought against them. They're not the worst of the worst. As a matter of fact, you see that only 5% had any violent criminal conviction. And so this is the reality that, of course, the Trump administration is lying to us about. Critics of recent DOJ changes, including 295 former employees, say the agency is no longer fulfilling its mission to uphold the rule of law, to keep our country safe, to protect civil rights. I mean, we can see that over and over again. I mean, Epstein is front and center. The administration's decision to trade off against prosecuting other major crimes is perplexing, particularly as state law enforcement agencies are also being incentivized to focus their limited time and their resources on immigration enforcement. And this is what the Sheriff's Association in Florida was saying. They said, look, we got criminals we need to catch. And if we go after everybody who is here illegally, the appropriate way, by the way, let me just insert this. They didn't say this, but it really is the welfare magnet. Beyond the criminals, I mean, they can go out and they can find the people who are committing crimes, whether they are American citizens or illegal aliens. And that's what they need to be doing. In terms of the rest of the people, just cut off the welfare. If somebody comes here and they want to work and they don't commit crimes, I really personally don't have a problem with it. And I think the Trump administration is right about the birthright citizenship. I think they made all the wrong arguments about it. And they have polluted the water for anybody who wants to get it corrected. However, when you look at the crimes that they're ignoring, violent crimes, as well as major white-collar crimes. See, here's the thing. If you are a white-collar criminal and you're stealing from people, Trump will pardon you if the crimes are big enough that you can pay him $1 million to pardon you. Otherwise, he's still not very interested in the prosecutions, and he will hand out pardons to anybody who can pay him. Data has repeatedly debunked the Trump administration's claim that it is arresting and detaining the worst of the worst criminal illegal aliens. Again, only 5% of immigrant detainees from October to mid-November had a violent criminal conviction. And the other issue is, why do we have people with violent criminal convictions out on the streets, whether they are citizens or illegals? This is the dog that did not bark over and over again. We said, look at this person. They had a long rap sheet. Okay, so why weren't they locked up regardless of their immigration or citizenship status? We have a system that is just catches and releases violent criminals. That's the real issue. And they're not interested in fixing it. They're not even interested in going after the criminals. They want to go after people for political purposes. That's why we see this about. And when I look at these statistics, it reminds me of the guy who came from, where was it? Was it Laos? But he was a grandfather. He had been here for many years. He's part of the Hmong people that had been friendly to the United States, I think, during the Cambodian or Vietnam Wars or something. Some of the details I don't remember. What I do remember is that ICE goes to his house in the middle of the winter in Minnesota, drags him out as he's in shorts without a shirt. And at the very last minute, His family gives him a blanket to put on himself. No shoes, anything. They put him in the car. They drive him around for a long period of time. They figure out that this is not the guy they were looking for. And they bring him back and just drop him off without apology. This is a guy who has been here for decades. He has been working, supporting himself. He didn't have a criminal record. Why are they doing that and letting criminals go? That is the Bondi Trump Department of Justice. Conservative legal star John Yoo suggests the Supreme Court losing streak may have cost Pam Bondi her job. So again, she may have prostituted herself to Trump, but she's also incompetent at what she's doing. Conservative legal expert John Yoo said on Fox News, the Trump administration's lack of success at the Supreme Court may have cost her her job as Attorney General during a Thursday afternoon interview. And of course, Trump is, I think, the first sitting president to attend Supreme Court arguments. This is something that is at the very core of immigration. It doesn't matter how many people he sends back. If people can come here as tourists, and there's a huge Chinese tourist industry that brings in pregnant Chinese women, they have a baby here, in many cases at taxpayers' expense in some of the states like California. And now that baby becomes an American citizen. And they go back, it's called birth tourism, right? And it's the stupidity of this birthright citizenship idea that is not in the 14th Amendment. And yet, as he sits there listening to these arguments, it really has to be drilled into him how incompetent the Department of Justice under Pam Bondi is, how the Solicitor General who is making the argument to the Supreme Court couldn't come up with good arguments. And I think, you know, when you look at some of the questions that people like Neil Gorsuch gave him, the one about citizenship for Native Americans, I look at it and I didn't hear it. I'm just reading the transcript. Maybe if I listened to it, I'd feel differently. But I kind of felt like maybe he wasn't trying to refute the guy's argument. Maybe he was trying to help him. And the guy wasn't informed enough to make that, to grab that lifeline. So he said, both Trump and Pam Bondi sat at the Supreme Court and heard the oral arguments in person. He said, maybe that's when Trump finally made up his mind that he had to leave that oral argument thinking that he's going to lose on what is one of his core central policy agendas in immigration. He just lost a tariff case at the Supreme Court a few weeks ago as well. Well, he was wrong on the tariff case, clearly wrong. It was a phony prevarication to say that he had the ability to declare an emergency himself about something that has never been treated as an emergency, something that's not extraordinary. But hey, he got away with it in 2020. You know, we didn't have an emergency with COVID. There wasn't any COVID pandemic, but he declared an emergency. And look at what he did. Tens of billions of dollars to these corrupt pharmaceutical companies. He locked down everybody. Now the lockdowns are coming back. I saw headlines saying that the fifth country has now invoked WFH. I thought, WFH, what is that? I looked at it and I thought, WTF. What is that? I don't know. But it's one of these acronyms. I had to look it up. It's work from home. Yeah, they want to lock us down again. You know, lockdown is a prison term. I said that when they would do lockdowns at school. I said, that tells you right there that they see schools as a prison. That's one thing I've always agreed with the government about. I said that when I was in school. I introduced a friend of mine who had, it really got him kind of angry with me. I introduced him. He was somebody who was going to West Point, and I said, he was home for break, and I said, here's so-and-so. And I said, we were incarcerated for 3 years together in a government institution. And he's like, I said, yeah, it's called high school. I saw it as a prison. He obviously didn't. He signed up for more of the same, I think. But anyway, getting back to this, it says, I think, obviously, they've been granted citizenship by statute, said the Solicitor General when he was asked by Neil Gorsuch about Native Americans. He said, are they citizens? He said, they've been granted citizenship by statute. The Indian Citizenship Act of 1924 that was signed into law by Calvin Coolidge. So far be it from us to question it, right? The Solicitor General didn't make the distinction between law and Constitution. It's no question that that is the law. The question, though, is whether or not that aligns with the 14th Amendment, which is the Constitution. That's one of the things that Supreme Court's always supposed to determine, whether or not a law is constitutional. It doesn't mean a thing to have a law, especially when you're arguing before the Supreme Court. Since Marbury versus Madison, they've said, we will determine whether laws are constitutional or not. So Gorsuch directed him to put aside the statute. He said, no, do you think that they're birthright citizens? And again, I look at this and I think, isn't he trying to help him? He says, no, I think the clear understanding is that everybody agrees in the congressional debates is that the children of tribal Indians are not birthright citizens. So Gorsuch pressed him for clarification, asking him to answer again based on domicile of the parents, you see. That's two parts of it, subject to the jurisdiction and domicile. Depending on how you interpret that word or that phrase, that changes how you see the 14th Amendment. And so we have two different interpretations of that. What is the original? As a matter of fact, that was something that Gorsuch pushed him on in terms of domicile. He said, do we go with contemporary definitions of domicile, or do we go back to what the original context said? And this guy seemed to be clueless. I mean, I haven't seen the full transcript unedited, but based on this dialogue going back and forth with the Hill, it seems like Sauer, the Solicitor General, didn't really grasp it. And so other people said, imagine going before the Supreme Court to attack birthright citizenship and being unable to say that Native Americans are American citizens. Well, the issue is that by statute or by the 14th Amendment and the Constitution, are they citizens that way? Clearly, the statute said that they are citizens. That was a special case that was enacted later. But that doesn't say that birthright citizenship is granted by the 14th Amendment. That is the question that is being considered. The other thing that I thought was interesting was that he didn't go back and talk about an 1884 law that went before the Supreme Court, Elk versus Wilkins. And that Supreme Court case excluded members of Native American tribes who owed allegiance to their tribes. You know, it's kind of a principle a wise man once said, Jesus. No man can serve two masters. As a matter of fact, that was essentially brought up as a pragmatic argument from Judge Alito. He said, you got people who come here, let's say they're a tourist anchor baby, right? So they get American citizenship, but their parents are Chinese, and they go right back to China. And, you know, maybe these kids come back at some point in time. They got full citizenship rights and so forth. And yet, maybe they're loyal to China. And so that's another aspect of this. What about allegiance? How does that figure into the subject to the jurisdiction of? And so, again, that comes back to no man can serve two masters. Bondi's lawyer was absolutely unprepared. So you've got a Supreme Court, you've got the amendment that is passed after the Civil War. Then you've got a couple of Supreme Court trials. The first one is about Native Americans, the question that Gorsuch asked. And so instead of appealing to a statute that was enacted in 1924, I think it is, by Calvin Coolidge, declaring that they are citizens, he could have gone back and said, well, the Supreme Court has said in the past that, no, they are not citizens because they are citizens of that tribe, first and foremost. Now, you can give them dual citizenship, but again, their true loyalty is to the Indian tribes. And so, as a matter of fact, Section 2 of the 14th Amendment, even one of the reasons why the Supreme Court got it right in 1884 was because Section 2 of the 14th Amendment talks about representation. How are the citizens going to be, how are people going to be allocated for representation, because that's what we're really talking about here, is voting. I mean, people back in the 19th century, people would come to America freely. They could work peacefully. As long as they didn't commit crimes, they were fine. But then there's a question of voting. Universal suffrage is not something that was around before the 20th century. As a matter of fact, when we would go to Williamsburg, they would talk about jury, being on a jury, or being able to vote. And so it was basically for head of household. So it was typically males, but it could be a woman if she is widowed and she owns her own property and that type of thing. So it's people who had a stake in the community, essentially. And so they always hold that up and say, see how awful that was? They didn't give full representation to people. And so that's what we're talking about. We're talking about things like juries. We're talking about voting rights and stuff like that. And again, subject to jurisdiction, it was always understood that if somebody is here legally, let's say they are an ambassador from another country, and while they're here, the couple has a baby, that baby is not an American citizen. Because while they may be here legally and by permission, the parents are not subject to the jurisdiction of the country. And so I think that when you look at the 14th Amendment, clearly the text, as well as common sense, says that we cannot extend citizenship to people just because a baby is born here. They don't automatically become a baby. It's about allegiance. It's about being subject to jurisdiction. You can make the argument that somebody who comes here illegally has less respect for the jurisdictional power of the country than somebody who comes here illegally has less respect than an ambassador does who comes here who's not subject to the jurisdiction. So again, maybe Gorsuch knew this. Maybe he was trying to help this guy, but the guy was clueless, and if he was getting thrown a lifeline, he didn't grasp it. So for more than 50 years, says The Hill, they're not very happy about this. They think that this is the losing argument, the Native American side. They said for more than 50 years, Native Americans were denied birthright citizenship due to the subject to jurisdiction phrasing. So for 50 years, did the people who wrote the 14th Amendment, that generation that wrote it, they didn't understand what they meant by subject to the jurisdiction? They knew exactly what it meant. And they knew exactly what domiciled meant. And so that's an argument again in the favor of getting rid of this interpretation of birthright citizenship. Then in 1924, a law signed by Calvin Coolidge declared that all, quote, non-citizen Indians born within the territorial limits of the U.S. are citizens of the U.S. as well. So again, the law noted that the granting of American citizenship, quote, shall not in any manner impair or otherwise affect the right of any Native American to tribal or to other property. So we're not taking anything away from them. They still have special favors and, you know, they can do casinos and things like that, which is not an issue back then, but is now has become an issue. The Trump administration is pushing to invoke the subject to the jurisdiction phrasing to disallow birthright citizenship for the children of immigrants, says The Hill. No, they're pushing to take it back to its original meaning in the Constitution, to take it back to what the Constitution says, what everybody agreed the Constitution said for 50 years. And again, why does the Solicitor General not understand that? He could have said, well, you know, for 50 years and for one Supreme Court decision in the middle of that 50 years or whatever, actually closer to the beginning of it, I guess. But he said, Supreme could have said, the text itself, the Constitution, and 50 years of agreement that there was no power, that there was no birthright citizenship for Native Americans. It was changed by a statute, but it was not granted by the Constitution, this citizenship. That's the way he should have answered it, but he didn't. And again, common sense tells us how this should go. This is, again, the kind of argument that I make about the drug war. Everybody in the United States and during alcohol prohibition in the 20s, everybody knew that you couldn't prohibit anything, can't prohibit alcohol, without having a special amendment because the Constitution doesn't give that power to the federal government. So they added a constitutional amendment so they could prohibit alcohol, the 18th Amendment. Then they eventually overturned it when everybody started nullifying it. They overturned it with the 21st Amendment, said, no, alcohol is legal again now. And so for 50 years, roughly, you had everybody understood and respected what the Constitution said. Same thing about Indian citizenship. For 50 years, everybody understood what it said. And especially the generation that wrote that understood what it said. Then they overturned it. And now we're told that it's got to be kept because of the issues there. And again, that was the argument that Trump was using for his illegal tariffs. Hey, we've collected all this money and it's going to be too much of a hassle to give it back. And which is really specious considering the fact that they made the argument that they wanted to keep continuing to collect the taxes as the case was being heard. They specifically said that, yeah, we can give it back. Then they changed their tune and say, well, it's going to be too complicated, too expensive to give this back. So from a practical standpoint, you have to rule in our favor. No. Well, the Morse Report, when it said Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson claims that children of illegal immigrants will have allegiance to the United States, even if their parents are illegal immigrants. How is she a Supreme Court justice? Well, this is a woman who famously couldn't tell you what a woman is. Remember? That was a question from Marsha Blackburn to Ketanji Brown Jackson during her hearings. And again, it's all subjective for her. How do we wind up with a Supreme Court justice that doesn't think that words have meanings, that doesn't think that that the truth is subjective? I've got my truth, you've got your truth. Well, then what are we arguing for here at the Supreme Court? None of that makes any sense.
The entire basis of law is the assumption that there is a truth that can be known. If there is no truth, there is no purpose to law. Nothing has any meaning, and therefore nothing is enforceable by anyone.
That's right. Yeah, why would you have arguments about something that doesn't really matter? Because everybody's got their own idea of what is right, and we can't say anything else about it. So then here comes Samuel Alito, and people on the right are saying, this is it. He nuked this whole thing. That was a headline from Revolver. He nuked that whole birthright argument citizenship. Well, you can nuke it with the Constitution. I don't think you can nuke it by talking about the pragmatic aspects of it. But again, what he was talking about was the fact he said that Chinese, Iranian, or Russian illegal immigrants could have children in the U.S. and those American citizens would then have a duty to fight for a foreign country. This is going back to a man cannot serve two masters. Which one are you going to be loyal to? You're going to be loyal to China, Iran, Russia? He said they have the duty of military service, and it seems to make them subject to a foreign power. Well, I would say there's another group of people. The elephant in the room is Israel and the IDF. I mean, you even got a congressman parading around after October the 7th and the Hamas attack. He's parading around Congress in his Israeli Defense Forces uniform. Can he serve two masters? Who is he going to be loyal to? And our interests are never going to coincide completely with any country. So he'll be loyal to somebody else. This is a congressman who's not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. And he says that they're not subject to any foreign power. It's pretty straightforward, said Alito. So let me give you these examples. A boy born here to an Iranian father who has entered the country illegally. That boy is automatically an Iranian national at birth, and he has a duty to provide military service to the Iranian government. Is he not subject to any foreign power? Do the same thing for Israel. It is a powerful and devastating point, says Revolver, but the Zionists don't see the inherent contradiction in what our country is at this moment. And so the New American says, so it boils down to allegiance, doesn't it? Or is it just being born here? What is that truly about? Again, to say that the clause did not grant citizenship to the children of temporary visitors or to illegal aliens who have no allegiance. The notion of allegiance is a key argument among proponents of ending birthright citizenship, said Sauer. He said, allegiance is what the word jurisdiction means. The allegiance-less view of the citizenship clause has created a sprawling industry of birth tourism, he said. And so Neil Gorsuch comes back and goes, yeah, but why do we determine domicile? Would we use contemporary sources on what qualifies as domicile, or do we have to go back to 1868, the year the amendment was ratified, and do we have to do this for every single person? And so I think he was trying to throw some arguments out, trying to get this guy to think, and yet, trying to think, but nothing happens, you know, with Sauer. So Amy Coney Barrett cast his argument that the children of slaves were citizens as inconsistent with his allegiance argument. She said they were brought here illegally and their children were likely not loyal to the nation. Sauer replied that while their entry was illegal, antebellum law never treated their presence as unlawful. But the reality is that that is the real issue behind all this. This is not about creating a birthright citizenship, right? This is about, are we going to allow the newly freed slaves to vote? Are we going to give them the rights of a citizen? You know, clearly they are here, however they got here. But presence and domicile doesn't necessarily mean that you are a citizen. Then the left will issue the argue the case of Wong Kim Ark. I should say it should be Wong Kim Ark. This is a guy that was born in San Francisco, Chinese parents. Sonia Sotomayor said the government was asking the court to overrule that decision. Said parents were domiciled in the U.S., but they owed loyalty to China. Well, that depends, again, on your definition of domicile. It depends on your subject to the jurisdiction of definitions. Sotomayor pointed out that Wong Kim Ark's parents eventually turned to China, so they didn't have a primary allegiance to the United States. Again, that is a Supreme Court case, but we could also go back and point out what the Supreme Court said about the Native Americans about 15 years after the 14th Amendment was written. Cecilia Wang of the American Civil Liberties Union said virtually everyone born in U.S. soil is subject to the jurisdiction and is a citizen. Well, that's nonsense. That's nonsense.
It's just absurd on the face of it.
Yeah.
If I were to, you know, either kick in your door or sneak into your house and you find me there, you're not going to assume I'm going to be a good roommate. You're not going to try me out and say, well, you know, he really wanted to be in the house.
Yeah.
You're going to assume that I have no respect for you or your property and throw me out.
You take a squatter, for example. Remember the guy, Venezuelan intel guy who came here and was telling everybody, hey, you can just take over these houses and it's really hard for them to throw you out, right? They're not subject to the jurisdiction of the homeowner, right? They're just taking it over. And so she says that hey, if they're born here, they're automatically loyal to the United States. Well, that is not true at all. Swaths of American law, she said, would be rendered senseless. Thousands of American babies undoubtedly lose their citizenship. And if you credit the government's theory, the citizenship of millions of Americans, past, present, and future, could be called into question. As a matter of fact, it would call into question the citizenship of Marco Rubio, which should be called into question. I called into question Marco Rubio's qualifications for running for president. You know, you don't have to be a naturalized citizen to run for Senate or for any other office except for president. And he doesn't qualify. And neither did Ted Cruz. And yet, all the people who had an issue rightfully with Obama's citizenship, I believe, it was even clearer for Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, and they just shut up because, hey, they're Republicans. That's the tribalism behind it. Wall Street Journal reporter Louise Radinofsky suggested, quote, the problem for both sides is it's not definitively clear what domiciled meant in 1873, the year of Wong Kim Ark's birth, or what it meant in 1898. And again, that Wong Kim Ark trial, 1873, was about a decade before the other one about Native American Indians. And they were both coming from pretty much the same Supreme Court. So these are two different issues. They came down on two different sides of it. But I think it's pretty clear what domicile meant. We can pretend that we don't know what it means. It's kind of like they do with the Second Amendment, you know. Oh, what does infringe mean? I can't imagine what that word means. What do you think it means? I think it means infringe. I think it means you don't even touch it on the edges here. You know, you're not the gradual process of infringement, of taking it over inch by inch. That's what it means. But they pretend they don't know what that means. They pretend they don't even know the bigger context. So the Bill of Rights is about the rights of the people against the state. And that holds really through all of them, because they saw the federal government as a creature of the states and of the people. And so you could argue that even the Ninth and Tenth Amendment were about individual rights. That's what people typically mean when they say the Bill of Rights is about individual rights, all 10 of them. She said immigration law has changed a lot since the 19th century. Again, so change it again. This is not written in stone because it's not in the Constitution. They keep going back and appealing to laws or to a Supreme Court case or whatever. Go back and look at what the Supreme Court thought about it at the time. So let's make America constitutional again. How about that? Single issue that the Trump regime, in my opinion, has gotten right is this birthright citizenship thing, to oppose it. And yet, they can't execute on that. And it makes it even worse. Not only can't this loser and his loser regime do this the right way, but they're damaging the issue for anybody else who wants to try to fix this and all the future. And he's doing that to everything in the GOP, as a matter of fact. So they may talk about the fact that Jonathan Turley says this guy will gut you like a trout. Yeah, he's a junkyard dog, just like most of the people in Trump administration. Look at Pam Bondi. She had absolutely no arguments to make. Instead, when somebody would ask her a question, she would be evasive and she would go on the attack, taking an attack to the individual. Yeah, well, what about your draft record? You know, well, we weren't talking about my draft record. We were talking about your release of the Epstein files. As a matter of fact, Thomas Massie immediately told Todd Blanche, he said, well, you're on notice that you got a certain number of days to comply with the law that Congress just passed about the Epstein documents, or you'll be held in contempt as well. As a matter of fact, Pam Bondi was just like in this argument here. This is coming from Mediaite. They said, in terms of who's being considered, there's various options. You have Jeanine Pirro, who is the U.S. attorney in D.C. So this, according to Turley, he's the one who brought her name up, and he called her a very accomplished lawyer. I got a real issue with that characterization. I think this is a very accomplished lawyer. I think she's a very accomplished sycophant and Fox News commentator who is very anti-Second Amendment, just like Pam Bondi. Both of them boasted about taking guns off the street, confiscating guns from people, saying that it makes the city safer. That is absolutely not the case. Keeping people locked up who've been convicted, that makes the city safer. But not taking guns away from law-abiding citizens does not do that. She has been anti-Second Amendment, anti-First Amendment. She supported ICE actions, which means that she's against due process, search warrants, excessive punishment. So she's against the First, the Second, the Fourth, the Fifth, the Eighth. I would say she's pretty much against the Bill of Rights. I would not call her an accomplished lawyer. I think she's an accomplished liar. Lee Zeldin, he said, is very popular at the Hill. He would be someone who could really sort of grease the skids. Is that really what we want? Isn't the Constitution about restraining government? About making it difficult for government to attack and come after citizens, not greasing the skids. We've had the skids greased so much, we are on a rapid downhill slope in this country. That's absolutely what is happening. And to commemorate it, we have the Trump Library. I showed you the pictures of it and the Trump video promoting it. My favorite comment was that Shannon Joy said, look at this, Vax Daddy's commemorative library looks like a syringe. But here's a satire video of his video boasting about the Trump library.
This is my library, my museum, my hotel, my legacy.
We're going in.
Bunch of kids and tourists reenacting ICE raids. Terrorizing the high five. Here's MAGA worshiping the golden statue with their red hats. This looks like a Paula White church.
You are nothing. You're a loser. You'll never
the Trump home.
I made you.
Oh, here we are. We got the Epstein blue and white temple. There you go.
Let me show you around.
And the FBI.
I think I found something.
Looking at the Epstein documents, he takes it out of his hand and puts it in the paper shredder. Yeah, that's it. Okay, we'll leave it at that point here. Here they go into the beauty contest, I guess. Pam Bondi just lost the beauty contest. We're going to take a quick break, folks, and we will be right back.
Making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Hear news now at APSradionews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
Welcome back, folks. We've got some comments, and we've got one here from Guard Goldsmith. And, of course, he hosts Liberty Conspiracy, and you can find that on Rumble and X. Go check out Guard Goldsmith. He says the naturalization question has nothing to do with whether the feds have any constitutional power to police immigration. Jefferson Madison wrote on that in 1978. So since the word
1798.
1798.
I wish we had them in 1978. It'd be a different country.
That's completely. It's all history to me. So since the word immigration is not in the U.S. Constitution, perhaps the feds are not supposed to touch it, as the Texas Constitution showed, because it had a Bureau of Immigration in it.
Yeah, we have these bureaus that are created. What do you... Who are the people who run bureaus? They're called bureaucrats. And that's what our government has become. You know, we talk about technocrats. Well, we have bureaucrats who are running the government, whether it's the FBI or whether it is ICE people. I agree with you, Guard. I think when we look at this, why can't we take the position that we don't pay people to come here? We don't pay them welfare. You know, if you want to have the Ellis Island experience, that's what that's about. If you want to have the experience of the American frontier, that's what that was about. People didn't stop by Washington to get their check before they went west. This is not a country that was based on free stuff. It was based on freedom. And so it stopped the checks to people, except that as all this stuff is happening, and again, Mark Wayne Mullen voted with the Trump administration to increase the funding for people coming to this country as refugees, for example. That's where all the Somalis came in. They didn't come across the border. They came here legally. They were paid to come here. They got refugee benefits. And then, of course, they engaged in massive fraud. And they used that as a justification for these ICE tactics that are out there, when the reality is, as I've said many times before, they need an army of bureaucrats and accountants to look at this Somali thing. They don't need a bunch of armed ICE agents going around the street shoving and pushing people. They need some accountants to go through and process this white-collar crime, but the Trump administration just can't get motivated to prosecute white-collar crime, as we saw at the beginning of this and as we see with all of the pardons that Trump has done. So there's solutions that are out there. First of all, you go after the fraudulent criminals, which he chose not to do until Nick Shirley shined a spotlight on it. This is all something that was known back in his first term. And I reported on it back in his first term, but he did nothing about it in his first term. And only when it became went viral, the report from Nick Shirley went viral, only then did they start looking at it. But they still focused more on roughing people up on the streets. And you can stop giving people money to come here. But Mark Wayne Mullen, the brawler who has been made the head of ICE, voted to increase it from $6 billion to $11 billion a year. Nearly doubled it. It's like an 80% increase.
We also have Bin Laden Bernanke. So, great name. Ketanji Brown Jackson last week got called out by Sotomayor and Kagan for making the court look bad. You know when you've got Sotomayor and Kagan telling you, cool it. You've gone way too far.
Yeah. Biden is even worse than the Obama appointments. Fortunately, he only got one appointment.
And briefly, real quick, I would like to let our listeners know that at homesteadproducts.shop, they are having a sale on their echinacea capsules. These are organic vegan capsules. Echinacea is good for respiratory health and all sorts of things. Helps immune cell production and just helps maintain a normal response in your throat and sinuses. So if you're having some sort of issues with that, go check out homesteadproducts.shop and check out their organic echinacea capsules. And of course,
this is the time of year for that as well.
Yeah. It is allergy season and I am suffering. So maybe I'll try this out. So go check out homesteadproducts.shop. They work very hard to make sure their products are of the highest quality and they support the broadcast. When you're shopping with them, you are shopping with the good guys.
Yes. We like them a great deal and love their products. Such an amazing group of products. Well, it's that time again, you know, just like we're talking about spring, bringing out pollen and everything. Well, we have the season of lockdown is upon us again. As I said before, five different countries have enacted work from home. They refer to this now. It's got its own acronym, WFH, because of the Trump fuel embargo, because of the Trump fuel crisis, something that was absolutely unnecessary. So the latest country to join this is Malaysia. We have many countries that are essentially domestic warfare in so many different ways. We see this happening across the world, going after their own citizens. Another country has introduced widespread working from home measures with the ever-growing fuel crisis. This is Malaysia. Prime Minister there recently announced the introduction of a work-from-home policy for all government ministries, agencies, statutory bodies, and government-linked companies. Maybe we could just get rid of them. As a matter of fact, this is kind of interesting because Malaysia has been heavily subsidizing fuel for its citizens. What does it cost to buy a gallon of fuel in Malaysia? Well, until right now, it cost only $1.85 a gallon, heavily subsidized. But they would limit it to, the price is quoted here, it was 71 cents of an Australian dollar for a liter. So if you convert that to American dollars and gallons, it comes out to $1.85 per gallon. They were limited to 300 liters. And now they have taken that to only 200 liters that are subsidized. So it went from like about 75 gallons to 50 gallons because a liter is about a quart. But the prime minister said the situation will worsen before it can be restored. It will take a much longer time to fix this. And again, as I've said from the very beginning, once you shut it down, just the traffic jam that is created by shutting down shipping, as we saw when Trump did it in 2020. That takes a long time to work out those kinks. And then with this shutdown that Trump has done, it gets even worse because now he's destroying oil production capacity. The Iranians are destroying it. He is threatening to do it in a big way today, I think, or tonight. And if he does it, the Iranians have promised that they will retaliate and they will shut down the production capabilities of their neighbors. And so Trump says he's going to bomb them back into the Stone Ages. And I think it was an Iranian foreign minister said, well, you know, they didn't have fuel back in the Stone Ages either. You're not going to have fuel either. This is not just going to be Iran. It's going to be everybody. We're all going to be talking about going back to the Stone Ages. We're all going to be moving our cars like Fred Flintstone, cut a hole in the floorboard so we can power it with our feet. That's what it's going to be. That's going to be the Trump legacy. I can't stand this warmongering, mass-murdering pervert. So disgusted with him. He's evil and stupid. I don't know which one is predominant, but it is. Those are his attributes.
My wife and I are planning a trip down to Texas to visit her family. And originally we're thinking, oh, maybe we'll fly down since it's only going to be a short trip. But the cost of plane tickets has gotten so ludicrously expensive that mm-hmm. it's just not feasible.
And what they're doing is that they're having to go up on prices so much that they don't want to show sticker shock for people for tickets, even though it is shocking a lot of people for tickets. Instead, what they're doing is they're adding additional things like, oh, we're going to, you know, charge massive fees for baggage and things like that. Those types of things, folks, are going to stick around, perhaps permanently. And so what they're doing is they're adding all kinds of ancillary fees, not just a fuel surcharge, not just going up on the tickets, but they're going to add baggage charges and other things like that. And we've seen how this goes before. This is not our first rodeo with embargoes. This is our first time we've had a president who's been stupid and evil enough to do it on his own. Many citizens went online to criticize the prime minister's work from home announcements. What were they criticizing about it? Well, they wanted him to mandate it for private companies. This is the mindset of a country that is used to being pampered with socialism. We need more protection from government, they say. The International Energy Agency, the IEA, has issued 10 recommendations in response to the global Trump shortage, which includes things like work from home and many other mandates. We're going to see a lot of the types of things that Richard Nixon did. Remember, we got the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit from Richard Nixon in response to the OPEC oil embargo. We had a Department of Energy that was created, I think, by Jimmy Carter. But, you know, we had a lot of really bad things that came out of the OPEC oil embargo, and they stuck around. So a reduced work week is one of them. A QR code-based fuel rationing system. There we go. We don't have to do even an odd tags. We can just issue people QR codes and give them permission to travel. Oh, that aligns perfectly with the long-term plans, right? Again, keeps going back to the MacGuffin. They have different reasons to get there. It could be a fake pandemic. It could be an unnecessary war of choice, a war of aggression. It could be the climate scare MacGuffin. It could be a lot of different things. But it always comes back to the permission society, to having IDs and that type of thing. Pakistan has ordered 50% of its public sector employees to work remotely, along with implementing a four-day work week. Vietnam, Thailand, the Philippines, Sri Lanka have either called people to work from home or implemented a four-day work week. Again, this perfectly aligns with the long-term agenda. You will own nothing. You will not leave your home. You will not travel without our permission. I mean, you can say that, you know, the planet's going to burn down or whatever, but of course, if they're going to have their AI data centers, those things need so much power, they can't. It's hard for them to make that argument anymore, so they've got to come up with a different MacGuffin in order to accomplish the same thing. You're going to stay at home, we're going to take your job, and you will live your life by our permission. And so the war's economic impact could get worse for Americans, no doubt about it. Amazon is adding a fuel surcharge to its e-commerce deliveries. Mortgage rates have risen to the highest mark in 7 months, and consumers may soon see higher prices for soda bottles and detergents. One word, plastics. But it's also the fertilizer. Our food is going to go up big time. We're going to see a big increase in the price of food once you come around to harvest time, because right now during planting time, the fertilizer is very expensive. But Trump has seized and boasted on the only good news to come out, which is something that came out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. He's taking a victory lap over a jobs report. He said, give thanks to Mr. Tariff. Well, Mr. Tariff is dumber than a sack of bricks, and you may be as well if you believe that line. It has nothing to do with that. As a matter of fact, when you look at the jobs reports, do people not understand anymore? It's interesting how the markets move back and forth based on job reports, based on inflation reports. And yet, no matter how many times we point out that these things are bogus, we look at how they calculate inflation. They've changed that so many times, it has absolutely no bearing. You can be looking at the price of food skyrocketing, whether it's eggs or beef or whatever, and they'll tell you that there's no inflation. You can look at the price of insurance going up, and that's not even in their index, I don't think. So they rig these reports about inflation, these reports about jobs. When the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts out their job report, have you ever noticed that they revise it every single quarter? Every single quarter, they revise the numbers from the previous quarter and say, well, we gave you better numbers than they really were. So they revise them to look worse, which makes this current number look better. They do that every single time. And yet, it works. They use it as the mainstream media uses it to push the public, wherever they want to push them, tell them things are actually better. You know, don't believe what you see at the grocery store. Don't believe your budget. Listen to the Bureau of Statistics, whether it's inflation or jobs, and they're constantly changing it. And so people seem to never catch on that these things are simply lies. Again, it's Mr. Tariff, and he's got, I don't know if he put that up there or somebody else. That looks something like Trump would do, but it's a superhero who's got like a Batman cowl, except the back of the cowl has been replaced with a blonde toupee. That's the only part of it that has any resemblance to Trump. It's the hair that takes a life of its own that's there. I'd say that he has a comic book understanding of economics, if he has any understanding at all of it. And really for him, it's not economics, it's egonomics. It's what he wants to do. And what he wants is a global trade war. This peace president began his administration with economic warfare. Then he turned it into, then he stepped on the gas, basically, and cut it off. and that is what we see here with Iran and the after effects of this is economic warfare, global economic warfare. I would just say to him, go back and read, or to anybody who supports this, go back and read Leonard Reed's Eye Pencil essay. Eye Pencil beats Mr. Tariff each and every time. Trump is betting, maybe he doesn't have any understanding of it himself. Again, this goes back to the argument, is he just stupid or evil? We've all got our own opinions. I go back and forth in terms of what I think about that. But if you go back to this idea that, we're going to have everything inside, everything's going to be, we're going to be completely self-sufficient, and we're going to seal off the borders. That's a stupid idea. It really is. And it doesn't work. And what Trump is doing is he's hurting America more than he is helping America. He had no path for an orderly transition. Nothing that he does is about an orderly transition. It's all about creating an emergency and then declaring an emergency. And that's really what he's doing. He's hurting American manufacturers by cutting off the supplies that they need to make things. Other people can get the supplies without having a heavy value-added tax added to it. And so they can make things out of aluminum or whatever. But, of course, his war against Iran is not just shutting down fuel, but it's also shutting down things like aluminum. that are coming from that area. So there's a lot of secondary and tertiary effects, knock-on effects that are part of this. And he is absolutely and exclusively focused on the budget deficit. I'm sorry, not the budget, the trade deficit. Trade deficit, he said, was down 55%. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. I do know that the budget deficit is up by nearly that amount. And when you look at what he wants to do to the defense budget, that's up by 55%. So he has freaked out about the trade deficit and declared an emergency when it wasn't significantly different than it has been in the past. Yet the budget deficit, especially because of his spending programs, is significantly different than in the past. And the budget deficit really is an emergency that he doesn't even want to talk about. And neither does the GOP in Congress. They have completely ignored the budget deficit. So the U.S.-Iran war tax, which is going to cause the budget deficit to soar, is beginning to hit American businesses and consumers. And you know, Eric Peters, from the very beginning, as he was doing an update on it, he was doing updates on the fake pandemic, and he still does them. He puts the diaper report and the date of which he writes it there. And he's also got the war tax report now and the date. And that's really what this is. Every war is a tax. So Nick Friedman, co-founder of a Tampa-based College Hunks Hauling Junk and Moving, is talking about his small business. Actually, it's not that small of a business, but it is much smaller than the big national moving companies. He said he's been hit by a couple of different things. He said, first of all, the real estate market has been dampened, and so they're not doing as much moving. He said rising insurance premiums are eating into his operating costs. He says now the U.S.-Iran war and a surge in diesel fuel prices are eating into his profit margins. He said we're in a bit of a catch-22. He said our fear would be that if we start raising prices, it'll hurt our customers. Well, it's not going to hurt the customers. It's going to hurt their business because customers will either do it themselves or go to somebody else. He said bigger companies can probably get away with adding fees as rapidly rising fuel costs are cascading across the American economy. That's exactly what some of them are doing. But he says United Airlines and JetBlue both raised big prices on baggage charges as well as adding fuel surcharges. The U.S. Postal Service has added fuel surcharges for the first time in history as well. And Amazon has announced a 3.5% fuel surcharge. He says, historically, fuel has been about 3 to 5% of his revenue as an expense line item, but it's now doubled to 6 to 10% since the war began. And so this is another aspect of Trump, to shut down small, medium-sized companies, because he only wants the biggest of the big around, because those people give him money. They're the ones who write the laws. They're the ones who benefit from the wars. Nobody else does. Higher energy prices act as a tax on consumers. And folks, it acts as a VAT tax. It's a value-added tax. Every stage of production and transportation has this energy price as a tax on it. That's what Trump has done. What we're seeing right now is not just a single price shock. This is the consequence of the largest energy supply disruption in modern history, bar none. This is bigger than what OPEC did to us. And this is bigger than the shock from COVID. They said this is layered on top of 6 years of structural volatility. How did we get structural volatility? That was Trump throwing a monkey wrench into the supply chains with his fake COVID crisis. That's what he's done. So we've had 6 years of Trump-created structural volatility. Now he comes around with a coup de grace to finish the job off with a massive global war on energy. He said these disruptions cascade through the manufacturing, the packaging, agriculture, transportation, and retail in ways that takes months to fully materialize. It is a metastasizing cancer, if you will, right? And so this K-shaped economy, where you have one part of the economy goes up, the other part goes down. This is also the concentration of wealth Well, you will own nothing. That's what the K-shaped economy is. He said, the giants, JetBlue, Amazon, are having more latitude to raise prices, whereas smaller businesses and discretionary services are caught in a vice between raising prices and turning off customers, keeping prices down while sacrificing margins. And if we look at where the long term goes on this, as a matter of fact, Colonel McGregor had a great point. What do we do as individuals? Is there anything that we can do? Yeah, there is something we can do.
All you have to do is point to the rise in the value of gold. And as gold goes up, the value of the dollar goes down, down, down. We are seeing in real time the yuan petro take shape. In other words, instead of a petro dollar, you get the petro yuan. I think that's coming. And the interesting part is it's going to be backed by gold. China has been hoarding gold, purchasing gold, buying gold. It has a vault in Riyadh, a vault in Hong Kong. It's real. And that's the future of BRICS. That's where they're headed. Now, will it ultimately encompass a basket of precious metals or something? I have no idea. But it's going to be based on some tangible, concrete value. And right now, that's gold. Now, we can't do that. We just can't. So what do we do? Do we watch our currency go down the toilet? A lot of people think that's where we're headed. And Nassim Taleb, you know him, the man who originated this idea of the black swan, he's been saying for months, and I agree with him, that frankly speaking, gold is now the reserve currency. It's not the dollar. And if the yuan is backed by gold, well, I guess yuan will become the petro yuan. So I think we've lost. We've actually lost by this stupid action, all because of Israel's greater Israel imagination and aspirations, and because the Israelis hate all of their neighbors, think all of their neighbors are inferior and deserve to be essentially exploited, bullied, and run and governed by them. It's not going to happen. I don't think you're getting a truthful assessment from the U.S. side. I think the president is desperate. I think he faces public humiliation inside the United States as well as overseas if he admits the truth. And when he starts talking about, well, maybe I'll just leave and dump all of this into the laps of Europeans, we ought to stop and consider a few things. First of all, commercial traffic through the Strait of Hormuz has fallen by about 95 to 97%. 15 million barrels of oil a day have been taken offline. The physical shortages have already hit so hard that right now Singapore jet fuel is selling at $231 a barrel. And as long as the war persists, the real people who shut down the Strait of Hormuz, who are not Iranians, they're sitting in London. They're called Lloyd's of London. The insurance brokers aren't going to insure anything that goes through the Strait right now because it's a war zone. So if you really want to open up the Strait, you've got to stop the war. What does he plan to do? He wants to land troops on some islands, presumably. Right now, the United States Navy sails 500 to 800 miles away from the Gulf and stays on the move, cutting giant squares in the ocean because it doesn't want to be sunk. It doesn't want its ships on the bottom. How do you get the troops in there? Can you get close enough without being detected and without coming on fire to sort of put the troops in a position from which they can attack something? Then how do you propose to attack wherever you want to attack? Can you account for all the potential air defense systems that might be there, including shoulder-fired missiles? Can you ensure that you've neutralized this brilliant network of intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance platforms with strike systems that are all over Iran? And they're miles deep inside the country, anywhere from 10 miles to 200 miles to 300 miles. You know, all of these questions are never really answered. It's the big hand wave. Oh, we're successful. We're brilliant. We've done everything right. These pesky Iranians are too dumb to surrender, but we think we've done enough damage. So where are we today?
Yeah, where are we today? Yeah, today we are waiting to see what Trump is going to do. We've got the big hand wave, as he said. You know, we're so successful. We're so wonderful. We can do anything we want. Just send us more money. Yeah. Trump has proposed a $1.5 trillion budget for the military, the largest in decades. Well, in terms of actual dollar amounts, of course, the value of the dollar is declining constantly. But in terms of dollar amounts, it is a record amount. I mean, they broke a record last time they did it. They went over a trillion. And right after breaking a record dollar amount, he immediately wants 50% more. Well, the Israeli war on Iran is costing U.S. taxpayers over $11 billion each week it continues. And as he's pointing out, jet fuel at $200 a barrel Malaysia or something? Where was it? It was someplace like Malaysia. I forget what country he said. Anyway, when we look at the price of fuel, we see the price of the pump of gasoline, but diesel is going up faster, and jet fuel is going up the fastest of all of them. Trump had said, well, we're fighting wars, and I don't have time to take care of daycare. I don't have time to take care of America first.
Because the United States can't take care of daycare. That has to be up to a state. We can't take care of daycare. We're a big country. We have 50 states. We have all these other people.
He doesn't believe in federalism.
We can't take care of daycare. You got to let a state take care of daycare, and they should pay for it, too. They should pay. They have to raise their taxes, but they should pay for it. And we could lower our taxes a little bit to them to make up. But it's not possible for us to take care of daycare. Medicaid, Medicare, all these individual things, they can do it on a state basis. You can't do it on a federal. We have to take care of one thing, military protection.
Yeah, one thing matters, and that's it to the peace president. It's wars. Yeah, I've got wars I've got to fight. We're fighting wars. We can't take care of daycare, he says. Well, I don't think it's the federal government's business to take care of daycare. I don't even think it's the state's business, but the states can do whatever they want. They're not bound in terms of that by the Constitution. The Constitution says if we haven't given you, expressly given you, the power to do something, you don't have it, and you can't infer it. And they've done that for a long time. But this is the broader issue here, folks, of course, is that Trump doesn't care about what happens to Americans, period. Right? If he did care, he would, because he's a New York City Democrat, he'd be wanting to pay for daycare and a whole bunch of other things. But no, he cares about the empire, his declining empire. And he wants to fund that first and now perhaps exclusively. The president's annual budget, more broadly, is considered to be a reflection of the administration's values, but does not carry the force of law, says the Associated Press. Well, that's right. You know, we can talk about the fact that Trump can declare what he wants to do, and he has executive powers to do that. A good example is what we were talking about last week in terms of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve that he didn't fill up. He can release that. He can give the gas away, and his energy secretary can determine to do that. And they can also determine when it needs to be filled up, but they got to get Congress to pay for it. And that's true of all of his annual budget things. But, of course, this Congress is a rubber stamp to anything that Trump wants to do. It's not a check or balance. It is a rubber check. It goes bouncing. The Trump spending proposal, for it to take effect, Congress would have to approve it. Theoretically, but this is a rubber stamp Congress. It'll do whatever he wants. This year, the national debt surpassed $39 trillion. There's your emergency, not the trade deficit, but the budget deficit. While the debt-to-gross domestic product ratio now exceeds 120%, surpassing the peak that was reached after World War II. Trump ran for president on a platform of ending U.S. wars abroad and putting the needs of U.S. citizens first. Instead, he has prioritized support of Israel's project to expand its hegemony and its territory throughout the Middle East, the Greater Israel Project. You know, when you look at how governments tend to ignore their own citizens. I forget which country this is in, but there's actually a picture of a politician who's running for mayor in a town. And the pothole was, it would just total any car or truck that hit it. It was huge. He filled it with water and he got some people to film him. And he snorkeled in the pothole. It's like, vote for me, I'll fix this. You know, that's what we voted for with Trump. It's a perfect metaphor for the Trump campaign, right? He put on a snorkel and he starts swimming around in the giant pothole that's been ignored in this country for the longest time. And he gets elected on his very first day. What does he say? He says, well, we've got this new project. Larry Ellison, my Zionist buddy here who gave me a lot of money, new project, and we're going to use artificial intelligence to custom make mRNA poison for you. How about that? And he said, now tell these people, you got to build your own power plants for these AI centers, right? He said, we've got a very old infrastructure. It's not reliable, and it's kind of crumbling, but he's not going to do anything about it. What he does is he tells the AI data centers, build your own one, because I'm not going to fix the other one. It's like this guy who is swimming around in the pothole now says, not my job. My job is to start wars and demand a Nobel Peace Prize. That's where we are, folks. The war on Iran is providing a boon to U.S. and Israeli weapons firms, hundreds of billions of dollars in additional profits. The same type of thing, and also the oil companies, same type of thing that he did with the fake COVID pandemic, where he helped Pfizer and Moderna while he was killing us, just like Netanyahu, who offered his own people in Israel as lab rats for Pfizer. They put us at the front of the list, and we'll collect all the data for you. Since you didn't have time to run a study and to see how this affects people, you know, the interesting thing is, and I hope I get to it, there's an article about the damage that was done to children unnecessarily. Two things out of these recent studies. Number one, no kids died from COVID. Number two, all the kids who are dying from myocarditis and pericarditis were the ones who are vaccinated. Number three, if they got two vaccines, the risk went up, two shots, the risk went up exponentially. And so now we're in a situation where Pfizer and Moderna, as they're trying to continue this scam and come up with new booster shots for a pandemic that never existed in the first place, they can't get enough people to sign up for their test. And people are starting to catch on. Most of the people are. Some of the people you can fool all the time. And so there's still a percentage of people who really demand this and want this, but that's getting smaller all of the time. One person, however, said, well, maybe this is a scam. Maybe this is just something's being put out there by Pfizer and Moderna because they want to push back on the tighter restrictions for vaccine approval. I got to look at this and say, tighter restrictions, is that all we get from RFK Jr. and from McCary and these other guys that were supposedly going to make America healthy again? They're going to allow these vaccine companies to continue poisoning and harming people with a vaccine that they know is harmful, that they know was never tested. They're not going to pull it off the market. They're going to let them continue with it. That's the fraud that we have that is running right now, because it was never about making America healthy again. It was about restoring trust in the bureaucracy. They even said that. Tulsi Gabbard said that was her mission, to restore trust in government, RFK Jr. said. We got to restore trust in the FDA. They're not worthy of your trust. They are untrustworthy. So, again, same thing is happening now to the military-industrial complex and the oil companies. They're making massive amounts of money with this war while the rest of us die. I keep thinking back to Chicago and their song, While the City Sleeps. Men are scheming new ways to kill us and tell us dirty lies. They nailed that 50 years ago. Anyway, the myth that won't die. War is good for the economy. This is from Mises, and they point out, as the state is predatory, as the state produces nothing of any use, it is the ultimate impoverishing situation. From an ideological point of view, it is even worse, because it mixes love for one's culture and one's homeland. It mixes that up with the state itself. This is what I've always hated about this so-called Department of Homeland. It reduces individuals' resistance to the loss of liberty and creates in their minds the myth of the protective government, because the government is going to provide security for them, right? It's going to be your security blanket. It's going to, you know, be your provider, your universal basic income, you name it. There's also another insidious idea, and that is that the war has economic and other benefits, the broken window fallacy. Yeah, As a matter of fact, you know, getting confused about culture and homeland, that is something that Americans are really confused about. They don't know the distinction, the difference between the American government and American culture and the American homeland. They can't make that distinction. Why would we expect then that they'd be able to make that distinction about Israel, right? They can't distinguish the difference between an ethnic group, a religious designation, and an actual government. They conflate all three of those things. As with all government stimulus, this is just a redirection of resources for war. That's a redirection of resources to destroy resources, actually. And as the New American points out, how do we rescue Western civilization from its domestic enemies? And they point out that Western civilization everywhere, not just in the United States, but everywhere, and I've said this many times, the governments have turned against their own people. They have decided that they want to divide and conquer their own people. Going back to, they have a quote from the 5th century about someone who was looking at the Roman Empire and said, the name of Roman citizen, once not only much valued but dearly bought, is now voluntarily repudiated and shunned, and is thought not merely valueless, but almost abhorrent. Perhaps not the citizenship part yet, but the rest of it sounds vaguely familiar, doesn't it? I tell you, once we get rid of this, the legacy of this ugly American president, Donald Trump, is going to be that people, foreign and domestic, revile Americans. Yeah, he is making it disgusting, and as long as he stays there, it's only going to get worse. The rest of the world already loathes him and what he's doing, and they're going to attribute this to America in general. I just have to say over and over again, I say this, you know, when I talk about Israel, we have to make a distinction between the government and between leaders like Netanyahu and Trump and the people who live there. You know, even if there are people who support both Netanyahu and Trump domestically, but there's a lot of people who oppose them. But even if you oppose it, as we see over and over again, we are powerless to change it. What can we do about it? Well, as McGregor pointed out, if you understand what's going to happen with gold, you can try to position yourself for that. And again, DavidKnight.gold will take you to Tony Arterburn. He can help you do that on a personal basis. He can help you to gradually set aside a savings program with Wolfpack so that you do it with dollar cost averaging, you do it over a period of time. Or he can help you if you want to do that with your IRA or do a large purchase for some reason. And he can help you with individual purchases, that other kind of stuff. But that's one of the few things that we can do. We can prepare. We can learn to grow food. We can acquire skills. We can start to stockpile gold and ammunition. There's certain things that we can do. But we can't stop these governments from setting up the conditions for World War III and for civil wars and revolutions in each of them. As I've said for the longest time, we are in a fourth turning, and people are, you know, you have two views of history. One of them is that the great man theory, that leaders move things and they're the movers and shakers of history. The other one is that there is a cyclical thing, and I think both of them are true. The cyclical part of it can easily be observed, and we can also observe what individual leaders have done. As far as the cyclical part of it, the fourth turning, Trump himself is doing everything to accelerate this fourth turning as we are entering into the very tail end of it. You know, going back to that book and identifying a process of about every four generations, a turning in society. And they identified that trend going back 500 years in history of American and British history. Now, with a global society, everybody is synchronized on that period, if you will. And it begins with economic crisis, and then it usually winds up with war. All the different countries know this. And this is, I think, the fundamental reason why they have turned on their own people, because they want to weaken their own people against the coming revolution. Writing on Monday, you had author and commentator J.B. Shirk laid out the current state of affairs. He said, open border policies in North America and Europe are sabotaging social cohesion. Christianity is under attack. Reason, rationality, and scientific inquiry have been abandoned. Our shared history is continuously rewritten in ways that turn our ancestors into villains. Interestingly, while we are now ruled by villains. And when you look at Christianity under attack, folks, I got to say that look at cause and effect. And I think really what has happened is the reason that this is happening to us is that is the root issue. Christianity rejected, Christianity under attack my entire life, going back to the middle of the 20th century, pushing back against God and schools and all the rest of this stuff. We turned our back on God. And the things that we're seeing here, that we're outlining here, these are symptoms. The root cause is our attitude toward God. Now, we can't do anything about that as a society, except to talk about Christ instead of about Trump all the time. Everybody makes him into the Messiah. And it is also not going to be fixed by focusing on Western civilization, how wonderful and great Western civilization was. Western civilization was the fruit of our relationship to Christ. It wasn't the root of, our civilization wasn't the root of all these things. They were blessings that were bestowed by God. And really, you know, when you look back at the American Revolution, even the people who were not strong Christians lived in a strong Christian society. So they understood that, like Benjamin Franklin said, you know, the blessings of liberty were blessings from the Creator, right? And they would generalize it. And, you can kind of read through the lines and see that they were, kind of lagging behind the rest of society. The rest of society was pulling these guys along with them. But they look like pulpit preachers compared to the evil leaders that we have today. Ideals following individual sovereignty, personal freedom, and maximum liberty have been eroded by the pernicious encroachment of collectivism, Marxism, socialism, and communism. Virtue is mocked. Sin is celebrated. Unchecked desire, envy, and instant gratification have supplanted temperance, humility, and self-restraint. Think about that. That's what we see in Trump. Unchecked desire, envy, instant gratification, even in war, right? You don't see from Trump temperance, humility, self-restraint, none of that. And this is what conservatives are cheering. Conservatives used to want to conserve the values that caused Western civilization to be blessed. But instead, they have turned on those values every bit as much as the left. And yet, this commentator only sees it as coming from the left. Schools, governments, and cultural institutions preach a false and destructive religion requiring Westerners to repent for their climate change sins and embrace the doctrines of multiculturalism and diversity as tenets of leftism's faith. Well, I think we've got a lot of problems on the right as well. Last week, a European Parliament conference concluded that the whole continent is headed for civil war. One professor argued, he said, the foundations of Western self-belief, prosperity, and competency are now broken, and Europe is on track for a peasant revolt. In response to Western government's betrayal of Western civilization, there will be an uprising in which the ruled seek to punish their rulers for violating their obligations under the social contract and for changing the rules of the game against their wishes. Most of the politicians and academics who participate in the conference do not believe Europe will survive this century. Various opinions about how the coming chaos will unfold, they all reached, however, one common conclusion. It will be bloody. That's right. We've got so many different confluences that are coming together with this. Some predict the same for the U.S. We will descend into civil war, they say, perhaps dissolve into two or more nations. That, I believe, is truly the function of Trump, who, whether he is just following orders or whether he was helped or put into place, this is his mission. And let's understand that there is a power behind all of this that is not simply the Masons or some other conspiratorial group, Davos, World Economic Forum, or the Bilderbergers, or the UN or whatever. the real force behind all this, the reason that it keeps going down this path all the time, is because this really is a satanic agenda. He is the guy who is on board with that. And we should never lose sight of that fact. Everybody's saying, well, I think he was put in place. You better believe he was. He's put into place. God controls that. And if you look at what Trump has done and the values that he's putting out there, they are anti-God. God did not put him in as a blessing to this country, but as a curse. And Satan told Jesus, and Jesus didn't dispute it. He said, I have the power to give any of these kingdoms to whoever I wish. And that's a delegated power, but it is a power that he had nevertheless. That's why we're seeing the kinds of leaders that are out there. You think Satan doesn't understand the fourth turning? You think he doesn't understand how these people can be used? Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become more corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters, said Benjamin Franklin. Again, you can look at this as cause or effect, right? Once the people lose their virtue, is it the effect that this virtuous people are going to get masters, non-virtuous people are going to get masters, or is it something that God has a hand in? I think God rules in the affairs of man, actually, and I think that it is a response to that. How can we ultimately defeat the toxic spirit of our age, currently called wokeness? And again, just as much of the Trump cult and the Zionist celebration of war and the worship of the state, whether it's America or whether it is a state of Israel. You know, the reaction that I saw these people with this Artemis thing, the so-called trip to the moon, whether it's real or not, I have no opinion yet. I said before, if the federal government told me the sky was blue, I would have to do my own research on that. So I'm holding off judgment on Artemis. Actually, I looked at that and I thought, Artemis? Why did they call it Artemis? Because I remember in the Bible where Paul gets in a lot of trouble in Ephesus, right? Some of the translations will put in there as the Temple of Diana. Some will put it in as the Temple of Artemis. I thought, why are they celebrating Artemis? Under the Greek mythology or Roman mythology, those are the Greek or the Roman terms for that myth. And so Artemis was supposedly the sister of Apollo, and they had the Apollo program is what they called the first one. So I guess that's how they came up with that name. And great is the goddess Artemis. It's going to take them to the moon, right? This is our society now. You know, when I took the boys to the to the British Museum in 2001. Travis was sick. He was having a reaction to the vaccines that we had to have to travel. And I took Lance around, and we went through and looked at the archaeological stuff there and how it aligned perfectly with what the Bible had to say, whether you're talking about Sennacherib's invasion as the Assyrians came in or whatever. They had big sculptures that were celebrating that, you know, from the Assyrian side and things like that. But we also saw this fragment of the Temple of Diana or Artemis or whatever, and it was gigantic. It was just a fragment of the very bottom pedestal of the column of the temple, and it was unbelievable, the size of the thing. But anyway, so we're celebrating that now. And when I saw all of that, besides questioning why are they calling it Artemis, I saw all these conservatives who were saying, why do we have a Canadian on board? Get that guy off of there. This is all about America, you know, and all this. So this is the kind of tribalism that is the legacy of Trump. You can talk about wokeness on the left side, but let's talk about the tribalism and the MAGA cult and the hyper-nationalism on the right. So, the left will tell us that's your truth. Someone else's may be different, or there are shades of gray. You know, this is what Ketanji Brown Jackson is all about. Well, the opposite of that is we know what is right. It's whatever Trump says, right? So the left will say, everybody's got their own truth and there's no reason to even have these Supreme Court arguments. I don't know why I'm even here, says Brown Jackson. The right will say, Well, we know that there is an absolute truth. It is absolutely whatever Donald Trump says. So there we are, you know, or it's Israel, whatever Israel wants. That's always right. So that's where the rest of us have to live between these two crazy extremes. It isn't about defending the West, says the New American. It concerns going on the offense for the West. Well, again, you know, when we look at the types of repulsive stuff that Peak Headset is saying, and, you know, over the weekend, the Pope came out and took them to task for saying, you know, you're trying to turn Christianity into a god of war. And I thought it was a spot on comment, quite frankly. And it's like, and I know when I say that, I'm going to have a lot of people writing me letters. They always do. You know, if I say something about somebody who I agree with on one thing that they say, well, then I'm supposedly agree with them on everything. And I know a lot of Catholics don't agree even with the Pope anymore. And he is very political, but he is right about this. He's absolutely right about this. This is not the God of the New Testament that Pete Hegseth is offering you. You know, Pete Hegseth goes out there and says, God trains our hands for battle and our fingers for warfare, you know? And that is from the Psalms. But what he doesn't understand is that Christ's kingdom is not of this world. He doesn't understand that we don't fight against flesh and blood. God is training our hands and fingers, metaphorically, for spiritual warfare, to fight the rulers of this dark age who deceive us with lies and deception. That's what we need. And that's, we need that kind of discernment, as a matter of fact. We need to be able to cast down these false arguments and take these thoughts captive. And the way they get to us is by making gods out of various things, whether it is pleasure or whether it is nationalism or money or whatever. It's always a false god that's being offered to us to worship, you know, whether it's a goddess of, whether it's Diana at the Temple of Ephesus or whether it is something that is more contemporary in terms of pleasure or success. And I find it just unbelievably repulsive, I got to say. It is these other things that are, that they demand. Trump is even good things like country, civilization, and family, even those good things can be turned into idols that corrupt us. Trump is a very good example of that. We will be right back, folks.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Tell Alexa to add the APS radio skill and have access to the best channels anywhere, from country to blues, classic hits to news. APS radio curates incredibly diverse playlists for you to enjoy. Get details at APSradio.com.
Welcome back, folks. We've got comments. DG8, thank you very much for the tip. He says, David, notice AJ calls Trump out, but is still making excuses for Trump and still praising him on several things. It's crazy. What will it take for this cult to open their eyes?
Yeah, I noticed that myself when I was there. He kept doing that over and over again. He would rant, you know, privately for a while, and then he started doing it publicly. Then he would do a public rant. That's it. I'm off the Trump train. And then he would start to make some excuses. He'd come back on again because that's what the audience wanted. He's off and on. He takes both sides so he can always pretend that he was always right. You know, when I spoke about that last week, Karen told me that somebody left a comment on Twitter on one of the things, said, well, you were for Trump in 2017. I was for Trump qualified. I said, let's give him a chance. You know, we'll see what happens with this. And clearly, as Julian Assange, we could say the same thing to Julian Assange. Well, you were for Trump. What Julian Assange said was, he said, we know that Hillary Clinton is a warmonger and a criminal. He said, we don't know about Trump yet. Well, now we do know about Trump. You know, in 2017, the very beginning of 2017, I criticized Trump because I thought that he essentially abandoned Flynn, who now I see Flynn as a massive grifter that is out there. You know, the stuff that he's doing in terms of Reawaken America and stuff like that. But I thought that, you know, the charges against him, I thought, were specious. And I thought Trump should have defended him. He showed absolutely no loyalty. And I said at the time, I said he demands 100% loyalty from everybody else. He shows no loyalty to anybody. But also said, hey, his number one issue was the border. And he also said he's going to end the war in Afghanistan and these other places. So bring the troops home. Just park them at the border. They don't have to shoot anybody. Their presence would be a deterrence. And you could bring the troops home. I said it'd be a win-win situation. They could kill two birds with one stone, but he won't do it. And then the caravans started. And then as we progressed through the Trump administration, we got a tax cut plan. My initial approach was I'm all for tax cuts wherever they happen, except as Gerald Celente was pointing out, I agreed with him. I said, these tax cuts are going to hurt us in terms of middle class, reducing the sales and local taxes that they allow you to deduct. And it's going to help the big guys, and certainly it did. It was almost all the big guys that got help from that. And it didn't trickle down on us, not at all. And so then it progressed. So we started going for gun control, 2019, started pushing vaccines in 2019. Hey, they got to get the shots. It's really going around, the measles stuff. And then by 2020, we all know what happened. So, yeah, you know, there is a progression to what happened, but I was not back and forth. You can go back and look at the records, as a matter of fact. Please do. Hey, I welcome that. I was not going back and forth on Trump and singing his praises on this or that. It was always a qualified thing. It was always, whenever we look at politicians, even if they do the right thing, they usually do it the wrong way and for the wrong reasons, just as we saw with the birthright citizenship stuff here. I think Trump got that right. But he's doing it the wrong way, and he's doing it in a way that's going to damage that. He's not going to succeed, and it's going to damage that issue for other people to try to fix it as well.
And, of course, it is a lot easier to fool people than it is to convince them they've been fooled.
Yeah, that's right.
People don't want to admit they were wrong. John, 1976, says this is more than conquering Iran. Iran is just an excuse to set in motion the collapse of the U.S. and world economy and global depopulation. Don't think Putin and Xi are not part of this scheme.
That's right. It is. That's what's going to be the result of this. We can clearly see this happening. And it's just going to keep snowballing. I think that Trump is going to jump in further on this rather than to pull back. We'll see. I hope that he doesn't take that approach, but we'll see.
DG8, thank you again, says, David, Trump is a criminal like all in D.C., steal the product of our time and labor through taxes, Social Security, Medicaid, and now wants nothing to do with paying us what they stole from us.
Yeah, that was a charge that was brought against Ayn Rand. I'm not an Ayn Rand fan, but, you know, she did articulate some important principles about the free market and critiques of the government that I agree with. But she was criticized because she took Social Security. She said, well, I was compelled to pay into this system, and that was the back end of this. It's not, you know, I don't see Social Security as welfare. I see it as a Ponzi scheme ripoff, but I certainly don't see it as welfare. So, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, if you pay into it, you should get your money back out of it. That's my opinion on it as well.
Yeah.
Now, my generation may not be able to get the money back out of it, but that doesn't mean it.
I said that when I was your age. I told Karen, I said, I said, there's a better chance there'll be space aliens than I'll get anything out of Social Security. But actually, I have gotten something out of Social Security. So I guess it's the space alien stuff. These people are still pushing this. And every day, it seems like we get some more stuff. We should call it, instead of UFO, we should call it UFO hoax that's out there. And it's all coming from the Republican side. What does that tell you? They need a distraction big time. Go ahead, Travis.
Yeah. We have DG8 again. And again, thank you. Says, any listeners in Ohio must get out and vote Casey Putch in the Republican voter primary against Vivek. Vivek wants to turn Ohio into the data center of the world, Silicon Valley, Ohio.
That's right. Vote against Ramaswamy so that you'll have a choice instead of two evils. You'll have a choice when it comes to the actual election. It's
Ramaswamy
all really about.
Is one of the slimiest, most inauthentic people that I have ever seen in politics.
Oh, I agree.
And that is quite a distinction.
Yeah. He's very glib. He's a good speaker. But if you look at his actions, you can tell what's going on with it. And, you know, when we look at this and how they're pushing us into a global war, we can see this very clearly with France and Germany, for example. You know, Germany has it's been anathema to them to go into debt. So we had, beginning last year, Fred Mertz. I love Lucy. came out and into this massive deficit spending for military budget, military buildup. France is doing the same thing. You've got Germany now doing mass evacuation training in a nearby country. It's Estonia or something like that. It's one of the small Baltic states. They've got the army there planning on mass evacuation of people. And they're also putting restrictions on men of draft age not being able to leave the country. You got to notify the German government if you're going to leave the country. I mean, these are all amazingly telltale signs, and we see the same types of things happening in France as well. And, of course, just take a look at the massive buildup here in America for the defense industry. These people want a war. They're doing everything they can to push this war. I mean, they've been relentless in terms of keeping this Ukrainian-Russian war going on. They want a war with Russia, ultimately, which they can then use against their own people. When you look at what happened over the weekend, as McGregor and many others pointed out, things are not going very well for the Trump side, even though they beat their chest and brag about it over the weekend. We saw several planes shot down. We saw a rescue mission, and they used that rescue mission, which, again, I'm glad the guy was rescued, and I'm sure it's an amazing story, will be an amazing story. I'm sure they'll make a movie out of it. The guy was missing for like 36 hours or whatever, one of the crew on the F-15 Eagle that was shot down. The pilot got out and was immediately rescued, but the other guy, they couldn't find him for a while, and the Iranians were out there looking for him, $60,000 bounty on him. He was hiding, and they put in a massive show of force, massive airstrike, and the CIA was involved in a disinformation campaign. I don't know how that's news. Does the CIA have any other kind of information other than disinformation? They're the ones who get us into these wars. But that's been used by Trump and by the press friendly to him, like Fox and the New York Post. That's been used to distract everybody from the reality of the massive hits that were taken over the weekend. And of course, it's not just the military getting planes shot down. When he said, we not only have air superiority, we have air dominance. We can go anywhere we want, do anything we want. Well, that turned out to not be true. And at the same time, they're telling us they've taken out all the Iranian missile sites. We see that, I think it was on Saturday, it was one of the days this weekend, the Iranians unleashed 8 waves of missile attacks onto Israel. In one day, they've had, before that happened, they had had over the first month, they had unleashed more than 80 waves of attacks in terms of missiles. So don't tell me that they've taken out the air defenses. Don't tell me that they've taken out the offensive capability with these missiles and drones. That simply isn't true. And, you know, we talk about the Pope, what he had to say in terms of his critique of Hegseth being spot on. Macron had a critique of all people. Macron was right as well over the weekend. He said to Trump, he said, be serious. Nobody's taking you seriously anymore. He says, first of all, he says, you say one thing and one day and the next day you come back and you do something completely different. You change your story completely. He says, maybe you don't talk every day. Yeah, that would be an improvement, wouldn't it? Everybody sees that he is desperate and angry. He unleashes this swearing tirade over the weekend just to show how frustrated he is, knowing that he is not, things are not going well in spite of the lies that he tells everybody. The U.S. Air Force had a very difficult day on Friday. F-15E was shot down. A-10C, the Warthog, was shot down. You had a couple of helicopters that were shot down. You had another plane, the Stratotanker, was hit again. And then you had an F-16 Wild Weasel put out an emergency squawk, meaning that they were hit. So you've had these types of things happening over and over again. The war is not going the way Trump wanted it to, unfortunately. Thank you for joining us. Have a good day. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.